The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Day 8. Group D and England-Sweden. Walcott, Welbeck and Ibrakadabra as Sweden disappear. Meanwhile in Donetsk, avant-moi le deluge as France reign, get it, on parade of Ukraine with their menes to society. Next up, Saturday, and it's the dramatic conclusion to Group A as Russia take on Greece and Poland, the Czech Republic. All of that and more in Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woo! Hello, Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Fancy seeing you here. Evan Fanning.
Hello.
Yeah, on your travels again. And Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
A rare sighting of Jacob Steinberg in the Euro 2012 Football Daily. Oh, what was that?
We'll be back in an hour.
Yes, indeed we will. Hey, tell you what, second day in a row, Evan, that Euro 2012 has witnessed an absolutely horrendous shower.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. three today, or if you take, well, 3 over 2 days.
Yes.
Ireland, the rain, and Ukraine.
Right, yeah, and the other one that we mentioned. Anyway, now we'll come on to the Ukraine business a little bit later on. I know you were across that game in a very real sense.
Yes.
But first off, the big story is England breaking their Sweden taboo, smashing it into bits, Jacob.
Yeah, the first time they've beaten them for absolutely ages. In a competitive game. I know they beat them in a friendly in November. This was an absurd match. I barely recovered from the minute by minute. My fingers are still typing away, I think.
Those thick calluses are smarting after
them. Yeah, it was just a shambolic game. I think there have probably been more games with a higher quality, for example, you know, Spain, Italy and Holland, Germany in the tournament. But this was just a typically English game. Both teams lining up in 4-4-2, lots of errors, really fast, you know, strong tackles and some really shambolic goals conceded by England.
But some amazing goals scored at the other end, though.
Roy Hodgson justified in naming Andy Carroll. Sweden obviously can't defend crosses, and it was a great goal that he scored. A really, really fantastic cross from Gerrard, and also Welbeck's finish. I know.
But what about Walcott's goal straight after coming on?
Well, I think that took a little bit of a deflection.
It was still a cracking goal.
Went straight down the middle.
Yeah.
And then,
I thought it was an amazing second half, as you say. And there was good and there was bad, but felt like mostly good for England, Amy.
Well, I think given what England have gone through in the last few months, if you sort of take a bit of a bigger picture, you got the feeling everybody really needed this. It was something that they really enjoyed. And if it's something that can bring the players and the squad and everything together that little bit more, then that's obviously a good thing. But you'd expect, once everybody's recovered from the emotion of it, that there will be some changes ahead from England. And what I think is going to be interesting is how they line up in the next game, because obviously Rooney will come back. So that you sense that in a way, obviously, because of the situation he's been in, Roy Hodgson has had to experiment pretty much the whole way along and improvise constantly. Presumably, there's been quite a lot of practice going on behind the scenes, of which Rooney has been involved, as well as practicing without him.
Who do you think he would go out for?
Well, exactly. I can't help thinking that probably Welbeck and Rooney looks like the most likely option to be starting off with. But I mean, you see the impact that Walcott, even Oxlade-Chamberlain when he came on, are making. And it seems that there's suddenly a lot of options for England, which is not something you really thought of necessarily when you looked at the squad or, you know, the last few months. There seems to be a bit of momentum building, which is obviously only encouraging. But the other thing I think is really important is the win means so much because of who they might face in the next phase, should they obviously beat Ukraine. But with France, it is quite tight and goal difference looks like being important. And I think without actually having been able to turn it around and get the win, England would have been under a huge amount of pressure for that last game. But I think having looked at Ukraine, they really were tired and they looked like very flat, and they even got sort of more or less, it seemed, jeered off at the end by their own crowd. I wouldn't expect too many difficulties for England unless they really shoot themselves in the foot in the next game.
Just to underline, finish second in this group and you'll probably be facing Spain in the quarterfinals. They don't like it up them, though. Big man, few crosses in.
Yeah,
adios, Españoles.
Oh, Spain. Yeah, well, I think you're thinking that Andy Carroll's going to mess up Gerard Piqué.
Well, I don't see why not.
Yeah. What was funny is that it was so far removed from what we expected from a Hodgson England side. You know, this everybody, well, mainly me, has been talking about two banks of four, which was the case against France when they were very dour. But what struck me early on in the game was that Ashley Cole was pushing up much more than he did in the France game. really getting forward a lot. And you could tell that England were playing with a lot more adventure. And probably this tournament has shown that if you do play an attack, you do get your rewards. And it's not going to be a tournament won by a defensive side. So you know, that might be the way forward for England.
Well, I'm not sure Roy's going to look at that and go, we want to win games 3-2. He'll probably see a lot of things wrong with that and thought we should have held on to the 1-0 lead. So, you know, what are you all doing charging forward?
Yeah, I think the two goals weren't from open play. They were from pretty bad defensive mistakes from set pieces. And the first goal was a bit lucky with the way that it fell to Melberg, and then Johnson kind of not able to clear it as well. It, you know, end up an own goal.
But did they cede a lot of ground as well when they went 1-0 up? I mean, they seemed to kind of sit and try and hold.
Yeah, I mean, but England do that. I think that's been the case. That was the case under Sven in 2002 and 2004. Not so much in 2006 when they had the Rooney sent off, which, you know, that was their only option. But the same thing happened against France as well when they were playing defensively. As soon as they scored, they backed off, and Nasri had all that space for the shot. So I think the case is you just have to attack in this tournament.
Hmm. I know listeners will be disappointed if we don't throw a bit more negativity towards this England performance. So can I just point out they were playing a Sweden side who'd previously made Ukraine look good.
Oh, come on, James.
Yes.
I don't think they did. I think if you actually look at that game, I think Sweden are a bit unlucky to be going home this early. Mm. I think they've actually contributed quite a lot to this tournament. And I've really enjoyed watching Zlatan. And I know that that's not something you're supposed to say if you're English. We're always supposed to say that, you know, he's rubbish, and that's the default mechanism, apparently. But I think, actually,
he's a bit silly. He's really talented.
He may well be silly, but he's still good fun to watch.
He's great fun to watch.
He was refusing to pass to a Sweden player unless it was absolutely his only option. Yeah. He clearly just thinks he's so much better.
The thing is, he will pass, but he always has it. It's like in his contract, he's got a mandatory 10 seconds where he can stand on the ball, look around. I'm that good, I can wait.
And then it's got to be a
Patrick
or something.
It's Matrix time, you know. For him, it's bullet time. Everybody else is kind of moving, but then somebody tackles him. It happened again and again. It was quite wonderful to watch.
And do we not pay tribute to Olaf Melberg as well?
And his beard.
Taking his place in the pantheon of European greats.
Right, go on, ask the question, Amy. Well, right, he's the answer.
He is the sixth player who has played in four European championships.
Right, and who would the other five be? Jacob Steinberg.
I've come up with Lothar Matthäus.
All right.
Is Del Piero one?
He is. Yeah.
Ooh.
I should know this because I did a quiz with Jonathan Wilson and Michael Cox recently to this very, very question.
And was this question asked?
Yeah.
All right. And what were the other two answers?
I can't remember.
Is Van der Sar one of them?
Yes.
Ooh. And Van der Sar is... Ooh, no, because Maldini wouldn't have. Would Maldini be in there?
No, there's one Italian Del Piero, one Dutchman Van der Sar, one German Lothar Matthäus, one Frenchman. And Olaf Melberg.
So there's a Frenchman out there.
Mm-hmm.
Thuram.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Do you know this quiz? We won it by quite a distance, but mainly because Jonathan spent about a week revising for it, and he did so well that the organisers had to give him an extra round for himself.
No.
Yeah. And it was
like
name the
night.
Denmark team from the 92 final against Germany. Name every player. He got 10 out of 11, and he was excitedly going around interrupting people's beers to show them that he got it.
Oh, bless. That's wonderful. Noz, bearded genius. We might follow him on Twitter. An interesting point. He says, is picking so many Liverpool players a big FU from Roy to Doug Leash, proving he can make more of the dross that Kenny brought than the Scot could? It's an interesting angle, though, isn't it? Because it has been a noted Liverpool bias from a manager who you could have would have been understandable. He perhaps turned a bit of a blind eye to the Merseyside talents.
Yeah, it'd be a very deep level of bitterness if this is what he's at. If he's using the European Championships purely as a vehicle to show Kenny Doug Leash that he can get Andy Carroll to head in. Across.
That's what sport is. It's spite pronounced differently. How about that other game then, Evan?
Yes.
Here's Jonathan Buckwell, Jay Bizzle, to his chum, saying, is tonight the first time ever at a Euros that an atmosphere was literally electric?
Oh, well, it made it a very strange atmosphere, actually, for the rest of the game. A lot of people didn't come back to their seats for a long time once the game started. It was quite the scene. It all kicked off during the French national anthem, and TV pictures went, the kind of tannoy playing the anthem cut out, and it was bizarre, and I didn't think they'd get back on. The pitch seemed so waterlogged, but yeah, credit to the groundsman.
Credit to the groundsman, and they were out,
and the pitch was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had what was it? Forks.
Yeah, we didn't. ITV cut straight away to highlights of England, France.
No.
Yeah. So.
Hmm. But they were out with forks anyway, and they dug holes in it, and off they went, and and off went France. 8 tournament games without a win prior to this.
Yeah, all the way back to Zidane and Materazzi.
Oh yeah. Hmm. But a very stylish victory in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were helped by the fact that Ukraine looked shot, really. They looked like they'd already reached as far as they could possibly hope to go in this tournament. And apart from these squeals of excitement every time the ball went anywhere remotely near Andrei Shevchenko, they didn't really offer an awful lot. And France looked tidy and neat and played quite nicely without having a great amount of threat. And then it clicked in the second half, and Jeremy Menez opened the scoring with quite a well-taken goal, having missed a couple of earlier chances. And then Cabaye scored, I think, his debut goal for France. And it was what I like is the interplay with the forward players for France. And actually what's quite nice is that, if you really want to be nerdy about it, the 2004 under-17s European Championship was won by France with a team including Menez, Benzema, Ben Arfa and Nasri, amongst others.
Right.
So, you know, these guys have obviously played together for a very long time. And they're playing quite nicely together. But a lot of them also just were quite obviously not part of the picture when Raymond Domenech was in charge. And Blanc has brought in so many new faces. And players like that who seemed quite cheesed off, really, during the Domenech era because they weren't part of things, do seem to have a lot more unity for the cause. So, I mean, I don't think they necessarily look like a team who's going to win it, but they certainly look like a team that's much improved compared to a couple of years ago.
They do still have a bit of a problem breaking down defensive formations. Is that right, that when Ukraine were just sitting back, the French were struggling, and it was only when the Ukraine made the mistake of venturing out of their half?
Well, it was funny. I mean, they were dominant. They'd had a few chances, but they didn't. They were kind of weren't in quite, you know, at full flow. Ukraine had a couple of chances, I think, a couple of shots which got the crowd going and suddenly started throwing men forward. And the first goal, I think, came from a really good counter-attack. Ribery did really well breaking down the left. But it was the first time in the game they'd got a bit of space. So I don't know, you know, potentially that's a way to, you know, play against them, that if you sit deep, they might struggle. But I don't know, you know, what Ukraine really didn't look like scoring that much. Shevchenko had a chance early on, but...
Amy doesn't include French among potential winners. What do you think?
I think they could. I think they're a potential winner. I don't see. They're unbeaten since, I think, September 2010, 23 games. Spain looks strong. Obviously, there's a few other teams look strong. But, it, you know, if they're growing into the tournament, they've looked reasonably good, I think, in both games without being brilliant. But they're sharp and they've goals and they, you know, look quite solid at the back too. Mexes, I thought, was good today.
I think also they'll have been actually quite pleased with England's win over Sweden, because going into the last game against Sweden, they would have probably, you know, conceivably been a little bit uncomfortable had Sweden had a lot to play for. But, you know, it makes it a lot more straightforward for them, in theory, that they shouldn't stand such a difficult task in front of them.
They don't seem to be creating a lot of chances for Benzema, though, do they?
I just get the feeling he's on the verge of exploding into this tournament. I mean, he's created... most of the French goals and lots of chances, and I just think it's not like a situation where he's the striker and he's under pressure because he's not scoring, which is the case for, I think, certain other players we could mention in this tournament. But I just think that he's in good form. He's come into the tournament on good form, and it's just so happened that the chances haven't fallen for him, but I think they will.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Now, before we get on to Group A, decisive final games in Group A. Couple of posts on the subject of Ireland, actually. Paul Doyle in the pod yesterday saying that he thought a united Ireland team was the way forward. Monica Lewinsky reacts angrily to this suggestion, saying, frankly, the lack of respect shown by the Irish FA towards the Northern Irish FA by pinching all their players and not bothering to invest any money in developing some of their own, etc., has already been bad enough without them basically harvesting the rest as well, and not a good idea. On the other subject, which Paul was also expressing himself on, i.e. that Trapp's been a bit of a shambles and not good enough. Fido Finnegan says, I think the real reason to not Trapp is that we were a shambles. For a manager of his experience, why is he trying formations and player combinations for the first time at this stage, etc., etc., etc.? Ireland have never been humiliated before at a major championship. We've only failed to get out of our group once, Euro 88, when we were pipped by eventual finalists USSR and Netherlands, while beating England to fourth place. We've always punched above our weight. We were never a soft touch until now. Sending old Paul Green was an insult to the fans who spent money they don't have to support the team. Surely Trapp was having a laugh. Evan, what do you think?
Well, yeah, poor Paul Green seems to be, you know, the evidence held up for this kind of case. Yeah, it's a strange one with Trapp. You can't say he's got a decision right in the build up to this tournament, really, in any of the games, barely even any of the substitutions. It's hard to see what game plan, if any, they went into the Spain game with. I know they'll argue that they conceded after 4 minutes, so their game plan went out the window. But I don't know, were they trying to, you know, go toe to toe with them with Simon Cox as an extra midfielder? It just didn't really make sense. And it is funny that he is, like, the valid point that he's trying out formations now, because people have been crying out for him to try out different things for years, you know, for over the last couple of years, and we've a lot of friendlies and he doesn't do it, and every friendly is almost the same first 11, the same way they play. And I don't think there's any real faith that he'll now start building a team for the World Cup with the likes of McLean and James McCarthy and a few others. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the starting lineup in their first World Cup qualifier is the same team as, you know, started against Croatia.
Yikes. And there's no way the Irish FA would take steps?
I just don't think that's ever... No, okay. No.
All right, then. All right, well, in Group A, Saturday brings round the final group games and some interesting matches as Poland take on the Czech Republic. Poland must win. Czechs could get away with a draw. And Russia could even get beaten by the Greeks, as long as it wasn't 6-0, and still go through. It's a wide world of permutations out there. Sounds like a good idea to feed some of that data into Jonathan Wilson, see what comes out the other side. Jonathan Wilson, are you there?
I am here. How are you doing?
Hi, Jonathan. You're in Warsaw.
I am in Warsaw, yeah.
Brilliant. Have you been having a good time?
Yeah, I just watched the England game, which was very enjoyable. Just went out to try and find a beer, but everywhere seems to be closed, which is a bit frustrating. So.
That is frustrating. Perhaps they've battened the hatches ahead of Russia's return to the streets, which saw a bit of unpleasantness in their last game in Warsaw.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think tomorrow will be a much calmer affair. I don't think playing Greece, there's no reason for them to go off. I mean, I'm interested to see how full the stadium is, because the stadium has been full in Warsaw, which it hasn't necessarily been other days. With Poland playing in Wrocław rather than Warsaw, just to see just how full the national stadium is.
Right.
Whether kind of people are turning out just because it's Poland, or whether, you know, Warsaw is big enough that they fill the stadium anyway.
Right. Okay, with Russia, not too many questions then, I guess, about this game, except for how many chances Kursakov will miss this time, and whether Russia will continue their so far fairly imperious march into the playoffs, into the knockout stages. But what about Poland and the Czech Republic? Ukraine looked like they might not make the knockout stages, so increased importance, I guess, on at least having one of the hosts in there.
Yeah, although 4 years ago, neither host qualified. I don't think it's as big a deal these days as it used to be. I mean, if you, you know, looking 20, 30 years ago, if a host went out, it really killed the tournament, because the tournaments relied a lot on gate receipts to make their money. Now, you know, gate receipts are a tiny proportion of what they make. So from a financial point of view, I don't think it's as important. But you're right, in terms of just general interest in the tournament. I mean, we saw the great scenes in Kiev when Ukraine beat Sweden. And you know, it's good for a tournament to have that level of interest, that level of support from people around. So, but it's an interesting game tomorrow, because I think the Czechs were a lot better than people giving them credit for. Vizitsky is an injury doubt. Sounds like they're going to start with Barosz, despite his appalling form. But the Poles are without Paki, the centre-back, which I think is a big blow for them.
Rzyzski, then, in quite serious injury doubt, no?
Yeah, he's got an Achilles problem. He went over to half-time in the game against Greece. I mean, I think they're still talking up the possibility of him playing, but I think it's pretty unlikely. And that, you know, that's a big problem for them, because I think he really is the creative spark in that midfield. I mean, the makeup of the midfield, they've changed around. In the qualifiers, they were quite dull, they were quite defensive. And then, because Thomas Hubschmann, the Shakhtar player, because he was suspended, for the playoff against Montenegro. They had to shuffle the midfield around and became much more attacking. They gained the fluidity and they looked really good. When they beat Montenegro 3-0 over the two legs, but looked better than that. They were really in control, passed the ball very nicely. And I think you saw that against Russia, but they didn't have that defensive presence at the back of midfield. And so when they played a team as good as Russia, they got picked apart. And then Hubschman came on at half-time, and by then it was too little too late. But he played against Greece, and I think that really... It gave him better balance there. Jurcic moved out to the right, and he scored the first goal. He looked excellent. So Jurcic will still play out there. I think Hubschman will still play alongside Plaschel at the back of midfield, but they do have a problem if Vizitsky isn't fit as to who plays behind Barış, assuming Barış does play.
I thought the Poles looked great against Russia myself. I'm kind of rooting for them in this one against the Czechs. But they seem to be building somewhat as they get into the tournament, but they're still looking for their first win. Are they going to get it, Jonathan?
Their problem, I think, is fitness, and I think they're really short on resources from the bench. I mean, in the first game, Francis Muda only made one substitution, and that was because he had to bring on a goalkeeper after Shenstone had been sent off. I think they do struggle for players to bring on, and I think in both games they have tired towards the end. It's against Russia, actually, towards the end of the first half, and then they got a second wind in the second, and I think that is a problem for them. The first game, they said the roof made a big difference because the roof was on, and it was quite a humid, quite close atmosphere in the stadium. And the second game, they seemed less affected. Obviously, won't be roof in Wrocław tomorrow. But fitness, I think, might be an issue for them. And, of course, the Czechs only need a draw. So the Czechs can go out and play very cautious football, see how things go. And if Poland haven't scored in the first 50, 60 minutes... Then if they don't have that extra energy, if they don't have extra options from the bench, where's the goal going to come from? So I think in some ways, the tactical approach of the Czechs is a lot easier tomorrow, that they can just defend and they can try and play for the draw. But the Czech situation is very odd because Bielek's been getting pelters from the Czech press. He was booed by his own fans at the game against Greece. Barış was booed by the fans pretty much every touch. And Barış is only 30, but he just feels a much older player. He looks a much older player. There's only six players who have scored more goals than him in European Championship football, and yet he hasn't scored in the European Championship for 8 years. So they could bring in Nesid, but he really hasn't regained his form after a knee injury. So I think it has to be Barış to start, but really out of form. So that's a problem for the Czechs. So for all their nice midfield play, they don't really have that punch, that cutting edge up front to make the most of it.
Should be a cracking atmosphere there in Wroclaw. We might even go ourselves because it's there. It's quite handy. It's right on the border. Well, quite near the border with the Czech Republic. Yeah, so there's going to be loads of Czech fans, loads of Polish fans, and amazing atmosphere, I'm thinking, Jacob.
I hope there's no violence.
Yes, we all hope that at either of the games. Good.
Good.
Right. Well, that's it then. You're very free to make predictions if you like about who's going to go through from Group A. Evan?
I would say Russia and Poland.
I would do two, Jacob.
Russia and Poland.
And Amy?
Four yeses.
Four yeses. All right, then. You got a last quiz question just to leave listeners?
No, but I think the only thing I was thinking, it's nothing to do with the quiz, but watching the England-Sweden game today, it just occurred to me that it was such a daft idea to try and extend this European Championship into 24 teams, because this really works. What we got at the moment, this is really...
Didn't that occur to you last night watching Ireland and thinking that eight worst teams and them are going to come into it next time?
Well, still, good to see the England man have got their instruments back. Hey.
Yeah. Can they play?
They were doing today.
Oh, were they? That's nice.
Imagine if you get your ticket
and then you climb all the way up to your seats and then you're sitting next to them with their instruments.
Astonishing. Astonishing. Anyway, listen, that's it for today's Football Daily. Many thanks to Jacob Steinberg, Evan Fanning and Amy Lawrence, and to producer Ben. And we'll be back on Saturday night, Sunday morning, with what happened in the Group A deciders. So hopefully you'll join us then. Bye for now.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.